I wrote Why You Are Australian in the thick of a craving for the tall Australian light and the smell of my country, the eucalyptus mixed with sunshine that was just singing me home. The homesickness was almost unbearable. I did bring my children back to Australia. We've been back for 8 years now. We came back for elderly parents for I would say mainly this was very, very important to me, was to give them a sense of home and belonging. My husband and I, we had been expats in London for 15 years. We never felt it was home. I've always loved the outsider's stance, and I still love that. I love the kind of observational stance of being the perpetual outsider, but we never felt that that was where we wanted to be buried, where when we passed away that our bodies would be slipped into the damp, cold London earth. We wanted Australia. I will say now, though, I've been back in London this past week. I'm here in Paris now. This feels so exhilaratingly that it's the centre of the world. And it's odd because, you know, we are now on the very, very, very edge of the world in Australia. We're in a little tiny fishing village. And it just feels like everything else happens elsewhere. And when I come back to London and I come back to Paris, I feel 2 inches taller. I feel energized. I feel so creative and I can feel the dynamism and the sheer crush of people. It's exhilarating. And it's what I felt when I first came to London and wrote very quickly 3 or 4 books in London and got myself a London literary agent. It felt like this is it. This is the center of the world. And back in Australia, it feels very, very removed. And I would actually love to raise my children again in a very dynamic place. But I do feel like I am giving them that sense of home in Australia. They can always go back to it wherever they are in their lives. And I know that they will. Mm. They've found home. And that's the Aussie suns singing through their bones.
There are always questions that come up. Am I making the right choice to stay here? Should I go back? Should they have part of their life here or part of their life here? It's you know, and there's always education and then the family surroundings and so on. But we also are mothers of citizens of the world. I think these children will go where their heart tells them to go.
Exactly. With great confidence. My son now, he left London at 11. He had his high school years in Sydney. He's back in London now and he's walking those streets like he owns them, like he belongs there and he is an ultimate insider. He's not like his two parents. We look at him and go, wow, he's different to us. Mm. We are the outsiders. He's not us. Mm. He's something else entirely. And it feels so exciting. He can just move freely with great confidence, you know, throughout the world, because that is how we are raising these kids. I think a lot of us are. We with great confidence, not to be afraid of just striding out and living in another country if you possibly can. Mm. It's great.
Yeah. And just quickly about Brexit. I mean, you must know people who are still, I mean, in London and who are being affected by these decisions made all around them. What is your take on Brexit?
Oh, look,
I mean, as an observer.
Cry that beloved country. I feel so sad for Britain in so many ways, what it's going through. Selfishly, I look at it for Australians and there's quite a lot of optimism in Australia that we feel like, well, perhaps post-Brexit, it will make it easier for us, a colonial territory, to actually be in the UK, to get visas, to get residency visas, to get citizenship. We hope, because it's quite tricky to do that for us. At the moment, it's much easier for EU citizens to, you know, move freely in Britain than what it is for Aussies. So that's the one, the silver lining for Australians. But I just hope Britain at some stage gets through this with a great sense of confidence and finds its feet again. I mean, who knows? Although I must admit, in Australia, looking at Brexit, it feels like a peripheral scenario in a way, because for us in Australia, all the talk is China and what's happening in China and what's happening in, you know, the Asian region and how China's making inroads into the South Pacific, you know, where France has its colonies and all the rest of it, and what's happening with Trump. So for us, all the talk really is about China and Trump and how the world is realigning itself and shifting. So Brexit, in a way, is a peripheral situation for us.
Yes. Finally, you being here in France, I mean, you obviously have a connection through your books.
Yes.
You're extremely popular here in France. How do you explain that?
Ever since I was a young girl, getting back to my book After, that's just come out, about a complex mother-daughter relationship, I read Marguerite Duras's The Lover as a teenager. And when I read that book about a very tricky mother-daughter relationship, it was like, oh, finally, I feel normal. I don't feel weird or strange or awful or abnormal or drowning. There's someone else who understands out there who's written about this before. And in a way, reading The Lover began my deep, deep love of French female literature. And so that's Colette, it's Marguerite Duras, it's Annie Arnaud, it's Simone de Beauvoir. I have read all those women all my life, from my teenage years onwards. Their honesty, their courage, their audacity is my tuning fork as a writer. And so, you know, if ever I'm thinking, oh no, I'm not being brave enough, I'll go back to Annie Arnaud or I'll go back to Marguerite Duras and I'll just, you know, tune my work. And I feel like all their voices have informed my voice as a very honest female writer, whether that's about sex within marriage or motherhood, and now, you know, an elderly mother suiciding and euthanasia and all the rest of it, it's those French female writers that always inform me.